Hello and welcome to Penny Earful, the officially unofficial podcast for Showtime's Gothic horror television series. I'm starting to speak the verbis Diablo.
Too many podcasts in one day.
I know, I'm on overload. Penny Dreadful, this for episode 304, A Blade of Grass.
A Blade of Grass.
I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Is Cecily.
Thought you'd let me come in sooner.
God damn it. Let's get on the same page and
track. My name's Cecily. Cecily.
What'd you think of this episode?
I loved it.
This was a standout episode.
Rory Kinnear has already played multiple different people and plays many more within the same episode and really shows off his acting chops.
You know, I'm glad I finally got to see him in a role that I appreciated because yeah. I have gotten antipathy towards his John Clare Caliban character. And there's lots of various reasons why I bitch and moan about it, but his orderly slash Lucifer slash Dracula.
Incredible.
Incredible. And especially since Ava Green was pitching 105 mile an hour fastballs
right.
as well. And she was pitiable and terrifying and commanding and everything. And like the physicality of performance continues to impress me.
It's incredible. She's such a tiny person that I'm surprised she doesn't break when she just throws herself against the door or wall or.
I mean, some of that looks painful. Like yeah. the amount of times she shattered her knees on this tile floor.
Oh my goodness.
And the way she would like dig her nails and toenails into the
floor
the
and the
flooring and
the squeaking wall. Yeah.
But she also did a lot of quiet stuff, like the way she kind of like would sit on the edge of the padded bed and draw her feet up and it make her look so small, and the way her toes would like absentmindedly trace the grouting. Like there was a lot of like
right.
it wasn't just the big flashy stuff and her floating in the air and speaking demon words. It was the quiet points too.
Right. And this is the character she was born to play, I believe, and she's just killing it.
And she's even finds ways to emote when she's in a near catatonic state.
It's incredible. Her sweat is acting.
They've got an uphill battle to ever win an Emmy for this show, I feel like, because it's on Showtime, and it's this ridiculous show about gothic horror, but really from an acting standpoint, it is, you know, going to be increasingly hard to ignore. If you're going to start nominating Game of Thrones characters, and especially American horror characters, Yeah.
That's not even a comparison.
And, you know, and again, I don't really, you know, the Emmys are not the end-all, be-all of awards. It's such that any award is, but damn, it's hard to see an episode like this and not think that it shouldn't get a little bit of attention.
Right. In whatever way that is.
Yeah.
Remember, we need to write this down for the Baldies.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the other thing. This doesn't get a lot of review or notice or like
it does
amongst
not.
Any like you know the AV Club writes an article about it and there's but
right,
the big people
my Google search for reviews this week came up with one page
yeah.
less than a page
yeah
it's incredible
yeah
but I'm glad we're reviewing
Steppenwalls, the Pony Wozniks and etc. don't really talk about the show much so glad that we're here to talk about it and that's
right.
what we're going to do.
It has earned it.
What do you say about an episode that has exactly one set? Two, I guess, if you count Seward's office.
You would call that a bottle episode.
You would call this a bottle. This is the classic example of a bottle episode. And the set, I thought, was great, too, because they were able to do interesting things with the lighting. Like, depending on her mood, it was either a pitch black cell or it was, you know, a fairly warmly lit room, and then when the demons were came strode forth, they could like play with light and shadow, and
right, or when God's there with her, she's bathed in this blue light.
And
I think I was just listening to another one of your own podcasts today about believable lighting, and that you can believe that this room has just those two dim light bulbs, but you believe that the light is naturally coming from that source as they light for each scene.
Yeah, and then it also supports supernatural lighting, as you mentioned.
Right, exactly.
So it's a pretty nice set. Pretty nice set. It looks like what you would find in a sanitarium. Maybe larger than I would suspect.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering what the hell the other patients are doing while...
Or how many other women are there?
John Clare is focusing 100% of his time and attention on this waifish Ava Green...
Well, they seem to all be trying to pretend to be normal and complying, at least. Mm.
He only gets the one scratch on his face.
Three. three.
No, but I'm saying, like, it's not like he comes in and he's just the other
right, the other patients.
Other patients might need to step it up a bit. Might need to be squeak your wheel a bit if you want the orderly grease.
Yes.
That sounds gross. Here's the other thing, because I came in wanting to hate John Clare, but I eventually couldn't, because...
I'm just going to call him the orderly for the purposes of this episode, because you never know his real name.
That's true. And I feel like that, you know, I brought in all my kind of hatred towards his character, and I was expecting him to be kind of like, forgive the expression, Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or he would be manipulative, or he might do something untoward, but... And I guess it did round into kind of a love affair by the end of things, but I didn't mind it. And also it was very chaste. Like I was thinking when she grabbed him naked and started kissing him, it's like, oh, how are you going to spin this to the wife?
Right. And,
you know,
or at this point, does the devil take over and he actually does have sex with her?
Sure. And also, right. and you know, the fact that he clearly loves his wife and he wants to maintain, you know, be faithful to her, yet at one point Vanessa just essentially doesn't take no for an answer and forces herself on him. But he still, at the end of the day, rejects her advances. He seems like a stand-up guy. And
he loves his wife and son.
What happens, because I guess before this episode, I thought that she would wind up killing him, and I guess that might still be on the table.
It might be.
It'd be
he hasn't left yet, and she hasn't gotten her surgery yet.
Yeah, but it seems like now I'm one, and I thought it's like, oh, well, when they both regain their memories, what's this going to be like?
You know, right,
they liked
right.
each other, but now they're mortal enemies. I think now,
how can
like,
you be mortal enemies when your most recent memory is having this connection in the soup cave?
Yeah.
I would say soup kitchen, but it was an underground
broth cave.
Type of, yeah.
Now I really don't know what. When they get their memories back, what did they make of it? Because I don't see anything in here. Why wouldn't they just join forces?
Right, exactly.
I mean, can
powerful allies, except that the fact that I hate modern day John Clare. But
he might get a lot of the sticks out of his ass once or he might be even more outraged that he was basically a good guy and he got shafted by life.
Right.
I don't know.
I think it all comes down to how did he die?
Yeah. He quit the job at the sanitarium, got a factory job, and got mangled.
His first day.
Yep.
Just mangled his face. It took him under, yeah.
How those principles work out for you, Johnny?
Actually, he got dragged into some machinery with a couple other guys, so he is just those pieces put together, like the classic Frankenstein monster.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like he at least got his hair from someone else.
Definitely.
And they've always had that kind of, like, scalp scar where it's like he had a full, like, you know, right. hair club for men style transplant.
Yeah,
but I don't know, I'm freshly intrigued with his character, and also I kind of like the mythology. This seems like the fulfillment of the Mad Monk's story that he carved on the different artifacts and whatnot from last season about the fallen angel split in twain, and he's got a physical side and a spiritual side, and they both want, you know, there's only one Vanessa, and I don't have a good feeling on what she is, because she's something significant. They're
right.
talking about her being there in the beginning, capital T, capital B, and only one of them can have her. But and to what end? It seems like to usher in some kind of Ragnarok Armageddon style thing,
right?
And how the Wolf of God is there to oppose her, and what Hecate's role. But I like how the mythology keeps kind of coming into focus.
Exactly.
Seems like it answers a lot of questions about what is the nature of Dracula, and like how can Dracula be more powerful than Lucifer?
I did hear some, or read online, and hear some murmurings about her being Lilith.
Yeah.
The original
but what does,
one.
One what?
Which was the other woman that was created at the same time as Adam and Eve.
So depending on which bullshit mythology you want to listen
and
to.
There's so many.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and then you start talking about, like, you know, True Blood's spin on the Lilith theory. But
not talking about that right now.
Like, Lilith is an apocryphal character that was the first wife of Eve, or first wife of Adam, and she was rejected because what?
She was too vain, I guess.
Yeah.
She was too
equal to Adam.
Too worldly.
It was something along the lines of, like, she was, like, too much woman for Adam to handle, so God created a slightly dumber model.
Yeah.
Which is essentially you, so congratulations. You're, yeah. You're just a...
I have direct roots back to Lilith.
Do you? Yes. You're the original stock? Okay. That yes. explains so much.
Yes.
No mere rib meat are you.
Do you want to run through her progression of crazy and not crazy? So just sure. in the very beginning, we find out that she's spent 5 months in that padded room
and has essentially all of her memories repressed.
Yes,
it's amazing that she couldn't even remember this guy. And she talks about how we barely spoke. Well, bullshit.
Yeah.
Not only did you speak, but demons spoke through him. Like, there was a lot that went on there, Vanessa. Yeah. Drill bit to the head took a lot out of you.
And if you are forgetting, which my memory was a little fuzzy, in the episode 5 in the first season, Closer Than Sisters, we get Vanessa's story after she got out of the asylum.
And we got more of the treatment side, right? Like, seeing what this hydrotherapy
right,
was.
Right, exactly. And hydrotherapy was a bathtub full of ice. They sprayed her down with a hose. They gave her this primitive lobotomy, and then they sent her home because they couldn't fix her. And that's when she had sex with Malcolm. Mm-hmm. Is Malcolm's last name or his first name?
Sir Malcolm.
Yes. Yeah,
I forget what his first name is now.
Malcolm Murray is what I'm thinking, but I don't think that's right.
Oh, yeah. In that case, his first name.
Right. So it doesn't matter. But that's when the devil first comes to her and they have sex, and it's as Malcolm. But it's also, what do you call this? It's not a hallucination or a made up, but it's a projection, I guess?
Yeah.
A projected person.
That's the thing. It does seem like it's time almost stops. And that's what I've always wondered.
The
like,
room where time always or time always stops.
Mm-hmm.
Time doesn't proceed. What is it?
It's not. I don't even think they're literally possessing their bodies. I think that this is kind of like a fracture in time, this pocket dimension that they're able to take her to, which lasts as long or as short as they need, and to do whatever they need to her for their purposes.
Or they just hijack her mind.
True. That could all be. That's another way to interpret it. Yeah.
So anyway, that was just a refresher on those two stories coming together. She's not eating. He has to force feed her. Pretty creepy stuff.
But on the other hand, I thought it was as gentle and compassionate as possible under the circumstances.
Right. But here at this point, I'm still not sure of his intentions. He's telling yes. her that she's going to be fixed and they're taking care of her. And she just needs
you better
to
get well
it.
Or it's going to get worse. I'm like, that's not... helpful when you have a mental illness.
Right. So after the hydrotherapy, he gives her a blanket for the night, and this is his first act of compassion, really.
Before we go on, because I also want to talk about this, him putting the food in the middle of the floor and yeah. then their little mind game they played with each other. What was that all about?
I think he was trying to coax her into taking care of herself or making okay. decisions for herself, just like a child.
Essentially trying to make her engage in self-care.
Exactly.
Okay.
To nurture yourself or comfort yourself. She was being very obstinate by refusing to get it.
Yeah, of course.
Even to the point where she was standing right in front of it, asking him to bring it to her. So yes, he gives her the blanket for the night, and I can't believe they put her in that room just still soaking and dripping wet.
Well, that's part of the, it's part of the hydrotherapy.
I just don't understand why women actually went through this. And this reminds me of Boardwalk Empire last season, where
they pulled
out all of her teeth, and this is a real thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if anything, they're kind of sugarcoating how bad it could get.
Right.
You could start
cutting organs out.
But it's not like they had a choice. Like, this was essentially...
It's true, but your family had a choice when they put you there.
But, I mean, they were this... It's hard for me to condemn this because this was the very beginnings of science. And it's like,
and
if we want to make another...
Are scary.
Well, they get hysterical. If you want to make another comparison to a big budget cable drama, look at, The Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on the one hand, they were butchering people. On the other hand, they were working on techniques that really did kind of pioneer... the state of the art and pioneer techniques that we benefit from today. And when you're dealing with the mind, like, you know, there's still so many antidepressants and antipsychotics that they don't know why they work.
Right.
They have theories on the mechanisms for action. But if you start reading some of the, you know, like the go on the Wikipedia and research your favorite, you know, pharmacological medication, it's crazy because they're just like, we, you know, here's a possible theory, a mechanism of action, and here's another possible, but they don't really know. So it's like, and that's the thing, like, you had people that are sincerely trying to forge ahead. You had other people who were probably crazy themselves and just, you know, wackadoo, pulling out teeth and doing what because they thought it was rotting the brain. But the families believe that this is how you got help. Like, you know, you could go to a witch doctor or you could go to an actual doctor, and just the problem in this year, they were kind of one and the same.
Right. It makes me think, you know, 100 years from now, what are we doing today that's going to seem so primitive and outdated?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, indeed.
The clothes we're wearing to be very outdated. I don't know.
No, I mean, I guarantee there'll be stuff that we do today that is going to be decried
probably
as crazy,
like,
in 100 years medically.
Cancer treatments. And...
Oh, sure. You actually shot the patient full of poison and hoped the poison killed the cancer faster than the patient.
How many people died?
You bombarded them with radiation. Are you out of your fucking minds? Yeah, like when they have the magic key and they have some kind of super virus that just affects the cancer, it's going to look barbaric, but it's literally the best we got now.
So, yes, that just is shocking to me, but it makes sense. So, after he takes her blanket, that's when she snaps.
Sure. Took her banky. Can't
snaps
do that.
Snaps for the worse or better?
I don't know, because it seems like this is the start of her uptick. Although, it kind of goes back and forth.
This is a woman who was not eating because she wanted to die, and now this is a woman who's fighting to warm herself. It seems like a positive sign of change for me, but... You know, you can't just cut someone's face and get away with it.
No, you can't. Especially when, I don't know, it's funny because she maintains a couple times that there's nothing really wrong with her. She's just possessed by the devil, which I would suggest is probably some form of mental illness. But
true,
in this
but
show's
in this
universe. I mean, that's a valid diagnosis.
Yes, she is God's vessel. So they straitjacket her for that, and... He has to feed her.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about the reason why she thinks she's not normal. But she's normal for being different.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be a cog or a freak. And he suggests there's an alternative to demon-possessed Harridan, and that is his wife and the other women he know who are... You know, that's the thing. It's like, what... late 18th century man's... appraisal of the women around him, I wonder of what value that would be to Vanessa.
Not much.
Yeah. I mean, like, oh, your wife is normal and she just stays at home with her child and she cooks food for you and she presses your clothes and she's ever so supportive about your taking in makeup to your, you know, work wife. Like, what is normal?
I guess it depends. At this point, he's been kind to her, if not very strict in upholding the regulations.
Late 19th century, too, I misspoke.
Yeah, right. So, I don't know. I think it just depends on how he treats her.
Yeah.
Is how she would deem that he treats other people in his life, but...
Yeah.
That's how I go about...
Did you think anything about the fact that we know this guy works the night shift, so this always takes place at night, but throughout the episode, she originally prefers that it be night, and then she professes, because she can't tell either way, which, man, that's got to be another fucking crazy way to live, not be sure.
When do you sleep? When do you wake up? Are you hungry?
I mean, that's an interrogation tactic.
Yeah.
So, she then decides that she prefers it to be the daytime. Are we supposed to... see from that more mental progress or emotional progress? Is she starting to heal?
I believe so.
Okay.
That's what they're trying to say. So in that, I'm going to go back to this place where he's feeding her and she's in the straitjacket for the first time. He brought a spoon from home for her. A wooden spoon so that it wouldn't hurt her teeth.
The one he used to feed his little boy, who's also sick.
Hasn't been washed. He also uses it on all the other women patients that you don't see.
And you now have tuberculosis, so have fun with that.
Right? But it's better than...
Well, they didn't know germ theory. Well, it hadn't quite gotten yeah. through all the medical journals at the time.
But this is the first time that Lucifer takes possession of the orderly. Which is really creepy, unexpected. Did you see this coming?
No, but it was like a gasp-inducing event the first time you see it.
Right.
Because it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, his eyes just turn black, and I was unsure whether he is always dormant in the orderly and is trying to...
I don't think so.
No, I'm saying at this point in the episode, that was my mindset.
Let me ask you this, because now that I've seen this a couple times, I almost wish they hadn't put this scene in... So that when he asks, why do you think the devil wants you, it just hits you with full force.
I agree.
Because this was just such a tease, and it didn't really, I don't feel like it added anything to the episode. It's almost like, I don't know, maybe like, hey, we haven't done anything supernatural like this whole episode. We got to get some black eyes in here. We got to get some shark eyes going, or
right.
The Twilight fans are going to be tuning out.
I think what it did was it just shocked her enough that she... induced a conversation with Dr. Seward where Dr. Seward was able to get through to her and they could communicate about what she's seeing, what she's feeling.
Yeah.
She can't get her out. I think that if it had happened in the later point in the episode, that it would have just taken away from that scene if she had a conversation with Dr. Seward first.
And also, I guess it has us questioning how we feel about the orderly the whole time.
Exactly.
And also shows just as they were building up this level of trust and mutual admiration, now she has a reason to distrust this man.
Right.
So, yeah. And that would be, you know, anytime you got to imagine that. If you're talking to your best friend, all of a sudden their eyes go shark black and they start talking demon voice, like that would be a pretty freaky thing.
Oh, is that not a normal thing? You don't have any friends that do that?
Nope.
So her treatments did increase, and all we see is that they are keeping her in a straitjacket at all times, and they have this gag in her mouth all the time.
Well, if she wouldn't go around taking her clothes off and kissing people, maybe she wouldn't get the bit.
But it's terrible, terrible, because they take it out and she can't close her
mouth.
That's
the thing, that's maximum pitifulness when and her mouth is gaping open and he has to gently close it.
Yeah.
And this is the scene where he brushes her hair and makes her up, which I thought, oh, this is interesting. He's trying to save her from this trepanning, and he's trying to help her fool the doctors and making them think, oh, she's taking better care of herself and right. She's looking healthier. But it seems like it was only to prop her up and remind her of this is who you really are.
Exactly. Look, you can be beautiful again, or you have color on your face.
Yeah, there you go. I was gonna say, because I don't know that his makeup job was gonna win any Emmys.
But
no hair and makeup awards for him.
He did good enough. He reads her poetry from Robert Louis Stevenson's My Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
And it's very
sad.
She
actually sees shadows later
mm-hmm.
of the beasts and the demons.
And you find out that it's Christmas. And I think, larger to the point, he did this as a special Christmas treat.
Exactly. I thought this was creepy.
Although, he could tell her it's Christmas like once a month, and how would she know? Because she has no clock, she has no
right.
window.
I would want someone to just keep telling me it's Christmas.
Hell yeah!
Happy all the time.
Yeah.
I just thought this was incredibly creepy. I thought it was going to a dark place when he was brushing her hair and putting makeup on her.
I never did, because at first I thought he was just... I felt at this point that the idea that he would hurt her in any way was past, and that he was genuinely trying to help. But if you harbored in the back of your mind the idea that he might hurt her...
I don't know if it was that so much, but along the theme of him saying that you just have to get better, just get better. Just here, I'm going to force it on you and you'll be better, right?
Yeah.
You have makeup on and brush your hair.
And he has to take it all off, and that was really sad. And
yeah.
Then put the bit back in her mouth, and she's just doing this work. I mean, I don't even know exactly what she was thinking.
She seemed to appreciate it, because she did look at her reflection and she cried.
But there was something dehumanizing when he was wiping the makeup off of her, and he even acknowledged that there's a change in the charge in the air, and he's like, you know, one of these days you're going to walk out of here and no one's going to touch you, much less
put makeup on you
or take it off without your leave.
Right. So this is about where I started to come around on him. So the next scene that they have together is her confessing how lonely she is and how her parents stopped visiting her, which actually I'm kind of shocked they ever visited it at all.
Yeah.
She'd
shit to bed pretty hard with the whole fucking your best friend's fiance and causing all the trouble.
Right. So she's just in desperate need of affection, so she disrobes and starts kissing him. And eventually he does stop her, helps her with put her clothes back on.
Yep.
And she's comparing herself to Joan of Arc.
Uh-huh.
Which is favorable.
And we found that that was a touchstone for her in episode 2 when they were talking about, the first episode where she was talking to Dracula, as it turns out, and he was, oh, I'm Captain Nemo, and she's like, oh, I'm Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
That's my spirit animal.
Exactly. So he warns her again that if she doesn't start to show signs of progress or if she doesn't comply or do whatever, that it will continue to be bad. They're going to drill a hole in your head and start poking around. And he gives her a very scary warning, but she says that I just got to be me.
Yeah. And I mean, she does, it turns out, try. But that's the thing that I kept coming back to in this episode, is you cannot tell a person who's depressed or, I mean, there's a lot of, at the one level, yes, she's possessed or she's got some kind of demon problem. On the other hand, it's also a commentary about how people treat mental, like, you know, snap out of it.
Yeah.
Quit acting crazy.
Exactly.
You know, that's not
just, why can't she just be happy?
Yeah, exactly. It's not that simple.
Right. So it's also a very modern view on depression and mental illness, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, we don't know how the drugs work, and we don't know why people feel this way, but if someone is sad in your life,
mm-hmm.
support them. Don't tell them to snap out of it.
Yeah. Wooden spoons, remember. Always wooden spoons.
And put makeup on their face.
Yes. Even if they really don't want it.
And
you might have to restrain them. To put the makeup on.
And but. You should make them food, some comfort food. And yep. If they don't eat it, then force it down their throats.
Yep. It's a good thing you got the tube down her throat and not her, like, lung hole.
Right.
I was like, how does he...
No.
He's doing this job for 2 bits a day. How is he successful? I guess he pours it in. If she starts gurgling, then he's like, okay, wrong hole. Try again. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So, and what if that tube was dry? She doesn't look like
it didn't
she's
look
got
like
very
it was,
hydrated.
It didn't look like it was lubed up pretty at all. So.
So they sit down and he says, I'll help you. Explain to me why the devil would be interested in you. And then the devil appears to explain himself.
Mm-hmm. Because I love you. Look at you. You look like you're halfway to looking like a demon already.
I'm into that sort of thing. So... he makes a plea for her love and her soul, and they start to parallel each other in across the room, and they start crawling towards each other.
Kind of the way they were moving was very unnatural and creepy. And right. Again, the physicality of both of their performances and the way they were even entwining, it gave you like a real serpent kind of
like
thing.
The scorpion and the snake.
Right. And the fact that the way the shadow... snake wrapped its way around her.
And kind of pushed her away from the wall.
It's such a simple visual trick, but very effective.
Right, exactly. So she is just giving herself to Lucifer.
Is she, or is she trying to get him to see, you know, she already has his name at this point.
No, I think she's fully succumbing.
Well, then what, why? Because with Dracula, she was clearly just trying to... get information on
I don't
him.
Think so. I think as soon as she got his name, she snapped out of it, but I think she was giving over to the seduction.
Okay. Well, I disagree. I think this was a ploy to get them to analyze, to have them come out and you know, that I don't know, because in a lot of like magical type lore, having someone's true name gives you a lot of power over them.
Just thinking of the Dresden Files.
No, it's not just the Dresden. That's where the Dresden Files is also pulling from the same magical lore. But yes, the fucking Dresden Files. If you have someone's true name.
That could be, but I don't think that that's the case. Because uh-huh. She always had Lucifer's name.
Lucifer.
She just didn't know who he was working with.
But also, I don't know that that even is his true name, because he says that's your favorite one.
Or Dracula's true name.
Dracula feel like he gave it up. I don't know. I could be reading too much into this. I don't know.
That's fine. I'm struggling to understand. I just got a different read on it.
Okay.
I think she's giving in. And then Dracula appears and makes Lucifer cower in the corner. So
surprise,
he is the master of Earth Domain, and her eternal soul could rule heaven and earth. Or hell and earth.
It makes me wonder if we're ever going to have like a battle on the spiritual plane where Lucifer will have the upper hand against the Dracula.
That'd be a good fourth season.
And where would be like even footing? Like what is Vanessa's domain? Because she has both the spirit and the body.
Mm-hmm.
Where does she hang out? A donut shop.
On Earth, I think. And then once her battle's over on Earth, she'll go to heaven. Isn't that what happens?
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's the only place I guess she'd be safe.
Right.
Sounds like bad things are in store for Vanessa.
They always are. So Dracula does appear, and she's demanding his name. He's got his own fun shadow wings on the wall behind him. Mm-hmm. And they reveal that they are only after her together. They just each want her. And I feel like my read on the situation is she starts to succumb to his seduction as well. And we see that she is just imagining his hands on her body.
Uh-huh, that was pretty cool.
So much the two are actually there.
Yeah.
And Dr. Acula reveals himself.
He does. Reveals himself plain. You have no medical degree nor power here. Be gone. That's what she was saying in her satanic verse, just so you know.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to get to that. So she pulls away as soon as he reveals his name, and she says, I know who you are. I know what you want.
See, this is why I think, that's why I was saying it was just a ploy, because as soon as she got what she wants, she snapped out of it.
Yeah, and she starts to channel Joan of Arc, and she becomes no more than a blade of grass. But she is evil.
It's so weird because she's like saying, I believe in God and he's going to protect me, but by the, BT dubs, I'm going to show you absolute evil, and this gives him this devil speech. Now, the other thing is, you know, especially with all the timey-wimey bullshit going on in Game of Thrones right now, I'm kind of hyped to see it. She goes to visits the Cutwife and learns how to speak the devil tongue after her experience in the sanitarium, right?
Yes.
So does that mean she's actually going back into time in her recovered memories and using her acquired powers as she gets past this to defeat them on this mental plane? Or is this an ability she's always had and she can subconsciously use it and it was repressed by the trepanning and the Cutwife helped her uncover it yet again?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or is it a combination of A and B?
Or is it that it's all happening inside in this manifestation in her mind? And
yeah.
You know how, like, when you sing a song in your head and you're a perfect singer?
Sure.
Exactly like that.
Or the shower. Same thing.
Yeah. Something about water makes your voice perfect.
Yeah. But I don't know. So, it's pretty interesting. I also like the concept.
Are you trying to reveal a plot hole here? Because I'm not down with that.
No. I'm not trying to uncover a plot hole. I'm trying to use this to understand what I actually saw. Because it's not like... I mean, this happens entirely in her mind. And
right.
We have a little
Dr.
bit of guidance
Seward
from Dr. Seward.
Dr. Seward wasn't actually there with her.
Exactly. So, like, who is to say what exactly they're trying to...
So, yes, I think her modern-day mind could have said the right things and hovered off the ground to make these things go away so that she could go back to present past time with the orderly.
Well, and the fact that she can banish both halves of the devil with some words and the power of God.
The devil's own words.
You'd be using black magic. I mean, that's interesting that you would use essentially fighting fire with fire.
Mm-hmm.
On the Lord side, Constantine plays with some of that shit too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The character, the Marvel, or is it DC? It's a DC.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's in the Justice League Dark now, and that's a DC property.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not unheard of, but it's certainly an interesting, very gray take on, blending the Christian mythos into this other stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which they do a pretty good job of.
Right.
But I also like the concept of the fact that not only is the Lucifer weaker than he is on Earth, but the Lucifer is getting weaker all the time because of the Age of Reason and because of science pushing back the superstitions, whereas Dracula gets more powerful because he draws his strength from eating of flesh and drinking of blood, things that are real.
Right.
Whereas the Lucifer is making this kind of like last ditch, pardon the phrase, Hail Mary for Vanessa so that he can fight this war and win, because if he doesn't, you know, another 100 years, how many people even believe in the devil? Like, even a lot of Christians say that the devil is more of a, you know, a construct to understand good and evil and less an intelligent person.
Right. And Dr. Acula is a man of science.
Yes, that's right. That's right. He studies penguins and narwhals and scorpions, so... Yeah. As things are cataloged and named, he becomes even more powerful.
So Dr. Seward tries to coax her back out again, and she says, I'm not ready. I have more to do.
It turns out that the best weapon against Dracula is global climate change and species extinction. If you can, like, just, you know, knock this planet down to 3 or 4 species left on it, well, he's got not a leg to stand on.
Right. You need variety in your meals or you can't exist.
That's right. It's got 1 foot on a grave and the other on a banana peel.
So the orderly comes back to her and her hair is gone. She is pre-surgery.
Mm-hmm. She's been prepped.
And why don't they shave her head bald?
Because they just don't give a shit.
It's more to humiliate her than it is for any kind of medical reason. I mean,
the reason you shave anything is to keep the hair from getting matted up in the wound. So maybe that's just good enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
know.
Well,
it makes sense.
And also, maybe that's just a prep, and they're just going to straight razor shave the actual area they're going to operate on.
Yeah. So he tells her that he's leaving, and he's seen enough horrors, and that he wanted to stay and help her, but
she's not going to be there anymore.
I gotta do me.
I'm weeping in front of my boy, and can't have that. He's going to think it's okay for a man to cry when he grows up.
Can't have that.
That's no way to live in Victorian England.
Nope. And he says that he's going to stay on until tomorrow when she's getting her surgery. And the last thing he wants her to see, and the last thing I want her to see, is a person who loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him. And
you couldn't see it, but she just made literal heart eyes, like the emoticons.
Did not.
Shot out. Yeah, you did.
Quite the
opposite.
Yeah,
you did.
Rolling my eyes did not make the shape of a heart. Yes, so he's leaving, and she will be too, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll never see each other again, as they are now.
What the hell are you talking about? They're totally going to see each other again. We know
they'll never see each other again, as they are now.
True. Jesus. True statement.
Get it together. Any thoughts on him just leaving her? He seems so committed to the cause.
I felt like that's a valid thing, although it's kind of a dick move to tell her. Like, just say, if you're going to, like, don't make the show, just, you can say, I want you, the last thing you see is someone that loves you, but I don't think you need to make a big show out of leaving, because if she's going to be a complete vegetable like you predict,
let her enjoy this last night?
Yeah, and just peace out, you know?
Maybe put makeup on her again just one last time?
Yeah, I don't know. For purposes of the story, it probably works better that he explain all this so that we can see what becomes of him.
Right. Which I'm dying to see. And so is he. Get it?
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah.
Dying to see.
Because we know he gets chewed up pretty bad.
Yeah. So that is what releases her from this hypnotic state. She returns to the office. It's been a while.
There's a lot of wax cylinders on the table.
There is a lot of cigarettes in that ashtray.
There are indeed. A lot of burns on her hand.
She missed a lot of appointments, and she's been billing her overtime, so there's that.
Renfield's been eating a lot of flies with the glass to the door listening.
Exactly. He's got 5 journals filled up out there on his desk.
Yeah, this must be interesting. You know, I bet he wishes he could bring that guy back to life and kill him again, because boy, oh boy, unveiling the secret to her early really seems like it's going to interfere with his plans of taking her body.
What are you talking about?
The fact that one of his familiars came to her in the House of Mirrors and essentially spawn this plot. Right. That really fucked him hard because he could have gotten her body without any resistance.
Exactly.
And now she's got full shields up. So,
but she did break up with him. Well, I guess it was that guy's fault. So yeah, you're right.
Exactly. And not only that, it's totally his fault. So it's just, that's what I'm saying. He wishes he could bring him back and kill him again.
Yeah.
Or maybe death is too easy for him. It's hard to see how he's going to continue with the smooth and suave route. Although she still doesn't know, you know, the Dr. Acula angle here. So he could still worm his way back into her heart from that side.
That's true. Just being his sweet, babbling old self.
Sure.
Which I'm so into.
And again, it's hard. Now that I know he's literally a fractured half of Satan, very hard for me to get into the headspace where he's just giving charming lectures about anthropology and arthropology and all the different apologies.
Really?
Yeah. Turns out Satan's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He's got a softer side.
Still hot for him.
All right.
Any other thoughts about this episode?
No, I do not think so. So let's get the feedback. I'm going to take the emails this week. You can send emails to Penny.
It's like we're two halves of an evil entity.
They've been thrown out of Bald Move. You can send your feedback to Penny Earful, all one word, at baldmove.com, or on our forums, forums.baldmove.com. We always keep a weekly thread for you to give your feedback on. First up, Kelly G says, "What an amazing episode. We don't see a lot of plot, but that's fine by me. Watching Vanessa and Orderly before he was the creature was so engrossing, I barely noticed an hour had gone by. I have a feeling something terrible is going to happen to Orderly before he actually gets to leave the asylum. I keep thinking of his messed up face and how much worse he looks than both Proteus and Lily. Something happened to this guy, and Frankenstein did his best to patch him up, but it didn't work out so well. Do you think the experience of working at the asylum has made the creature what he is? He has impulse control issues and alternates between cold hostility and flashes of anger. He seems mentally unbalanced at times. Has his work at the insane asylum imprinted on him somehow? Was he cursed to suffer as those under his care did? We know that Lily definitely carried over her experiences, and Proteus did as well. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on what the deal with Lucifer and Dracula is. Can Dracula shapeshift? Do they both do possession? So confusing. Is Dracula stronger because of the earth in his domain? Lucifer definitely seemed to be cowering in a corner when Dracula arrived, which seemed odd being the ruler of hell. Being afraid of the master of vampires." Let's talk about these things first. Number one, are the experiences from the mental institution carrying over to his life? I want to say no, because it seems like he was a caring and gentle soul. But on the other hand, maybe the inhumanity of the way the inmates were treated kind of wore off on him some way psychically.
Right. I mean, this person seems like a compassionate, kind person who doesn't like poetry. Caliban is a monster who loves poetry.
Don't you think he was protesting a bit too much, though? Because he's like, oh, I don't know poetry, and I'm no hand at figures or read. But he smashes the poetry read session.
Right.
And he builds ships with his son. Wooden ships.
Yeah.
Like, that's a more urbane hobby than I would imagine workaday stiff would have,
right,
back in the jolly old Victorian age.
Yeah.
Hellscape London.
It seems just like a complete opposite version of what he is now.
Yeah. I felt like we covered the whole, you know, vampire versus Satan and how they're kind of two sides of the different sides of the same coin. So let us move on to the other email. David F. Says, slightly childish question, but justified in the buildup of the season seems to be doing. Which of the following physical fights do you think we're more likely to see near the climax of season 3, if any? 1. Dracula versus the Wolfman, Ethan. 2. Dracula versus Frankenstein's monster, John Clare. 3. Frankenstein's monster versus the Wolfman. Or some epic three-way brawl.
Three-way.
And he says, parenthetically, wouldn't be the first three-way of the season. Har, har, har. Apart from Dracula's general evilness, I can easily imagine a fight starting between Ethan and John Clare over, of course, Lily / Brona. That's a real clusterfuck of jealousy, rejection, deception, and male rage, and I can think of no better way for it to resolve than a good old-fashioned smackdown. Of course, I imagine Brona could probably hold her own on any given Sunday, as I believe you Americans say. David, by the way, is from London. And he's an expert.
No kidding.
Now I've actually noticed his last name. He is an expert in wolf lore. He's the one that commissioned the American Werewolf in London on behalf of his brother, who got married.
Congratulations.
In the second degree. I would count Mr. Hyde in this, but we've yet to see how powerful he is in his transformed state. So, what do you think about these potential... I
would love to see a John Clare Caliban against Dracula.
That's not one of... Oh, yeah, that was one of the options.
Caliban gets his memories back. He and Vanessa team up as a super duo, and they fight Dracula. Dr. Acula, excuse me.
I don't have any idea how to properly calibrate the powers involved here, because it seems like Dracula would just beat the ass of Frankenstein's monster or a wolfman. But Vanessa can beat him because she's got the dark arts. She doesn't have the physical strength, but she's got the dark arts. It seems, but on the other hand, they keep on saying Ethan's the wolf of God, which so far just means he can rip people's heads off. Right. They've also talked about they mentioned God's bloody throne. They talk about that specific phrase a lot.
Really?
Implying that maybe God's got a little bit of a dark side in this universe.
Well, duh. Haven't you read the Bible?
It's true. True. But I don't know. And I also feel like that Ethan would probably whip Caliban's ass in his wolf state.
What? Ethan would.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were saying Caliban would beat him. Yes. I think Ethan could kill anybody in his wolf state.
And I also don't think that they would fight over Lily or Brona, because I think that Ethan is pretty much moved on to Lily. Or no, I'm sorry, pretty much moved on to Vanessa now.
Right.
Although he seems to be tempted by Hecate, and also, you know, Vanessa has moved on to Dr. Sweet.
Right.
So I don't know what I'm saying.
I still want them to get back together eventually.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to root for some other kind of pairing.
But I just don't know what a fight between a vampire and a werewolf looks like. I mean, I've seen Underworld. I've seen Twilight.
Not at all like that.
That's what I'm saying. I know there's permutations of this fight that I've seen, and neither one of them seems like it's completely applicable.
This can't be the season where we get the all-out fight between everyone, but I've cast my vote.
He also wants to know, what do you think the progression for Pinier Dreadful is beyond the season? Assuming Dracula's defeat, destruction in the season, a big if, where do you go from here? Satan himself, that was already kind of a proxy war via the witches of season 2. How do you differentiate Satan, interestingly, from Dracula, other than dressing him in red?
And what if his eyes be red?
What if somehow at the end of this season, Dracula and Satan, Lucifer, are able to re-merge, so they're one whole fallen angel?
You want that?
I don't want that, but I'm saying that would be... He's asking for a clear progression. Well, that's the clear progression.
That's true. I mean, how do you defeat them separately? How do you defeat them together?
Right. Like, that's the thing. You beat them all separately. Now they combine their powers, and Captain Planet comes out, and now what do you do? I mean, that's standard Voltron logic, you know?
Right.
You got this crazy creature, and you can't beat him with your spacesuits, and you can't beat him with your lions. Then you pull out Voltron, and then you... So it's like, I feel like they've already introduced this duality. They're playing with the concepts of blending dualities. I feel like the language of the show is already setting us up for this possibility, and that would be pretty crazy. Because eventually, you've got the classic problem of, like, the Cthulhu series, which, when mankind struggles against literal gods, what the fuck, what's going on? It's Batman versus Superman, only more of a power discrepancy.
But man always wins in those stories.
No, usually man gets his sanity eaten. And thrown into an insane asylum, best case scenario.
You're speaking just about a Lovecraftian
yes.
type of story, but uh-huh. then you threw Batman and Superman in there.
Sure, but then I threw so firmly with, back to Lovecraft's court.
In every instance, with the exception of a Lovecraft story, man always wins.
I don't know.
You don't know?
In the canonical version of Batman versus Superman, Batman dies, so who really won?
I was calling Superman and Batman mankind.
Ah, so you're saying so no matter who wins,
so whatever
force
they're
win.
Teamed up against, evil being the supernatural.
I think you're losing the plot. You're losing the plot here,
okay.
Zack Snyder. The point is, like, if you really have like humans involved in this cosmic battle, now maybe the fact that if Vanessa is literally Lilith, that she's kind of a demigod herself, and Ethan is too. Maybe their union, like, you know, the whole get to fuck already kind of business. Maybe right. them working together is a. But it seems silly that a witch and a werewolf can defeat the arch nemesis of God.
Do you remember?
But I guess God, that's the other thing. God could put his big thumb on the scale.
Right. Which, why not? You're God. Yeah. Jeez. I just don't understand religion. So, do you remember the episode, I think it was in season one, where they went to the seance?
Sure.
And woke up Vanessa?
Mm-hmm.
The bitch was woke.
Yep.
Someone accused her of being Lilith.
Hmm.
And she says in whatever demon voice, no, much older.
Hmm. How do you get much? Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is what Satan said is before time, it
but
was
it could
thee
be,
and me.
Yeah, but that's the confusion with that scene in particular is that Lilith's, or not Lilith, geez, Vanessa's whatever is inside of her, whatever demon or, uh-huh. or spirit that is old and has these demons drawn to her.
Uh-huh.
Was that the what was speaking, or was it like the devil itself saying that it was much older?
I do not know.
But neither do I. So Gretelby says, the show's mythos have confused me again. I accept Lucifer and Dracula as fallen brothers who want separate parts of Vanessa. They're the pillars of evil, and that was well done, but there's a third spirit inside Vanessa that has Lucifer and Dracula cowering in the corner. I get that Vanessa could inevitably become the final threat, like the Dark Phoenix story, but it doesn't track well to have three seasons of...
Not the only one making comic book analogies here.
Oh my gosh, it doesn't track well to have three seasons of superfluous threats when she could have just cleaned house from the beginning. This may not be a problem for most viewers. I've just seen this attempted before and it didn't work out very well.
Well, it is kind of, you know, it's like you had the key to winning all the time. But, you know, part of it is that I guess the journey is the destination to some extent. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you can't hand wave everything away. But the fact is if Vanessa has for various reasons had this stuff locked away and didn't know it, I mean... Luke Skywalker could have stopped whining on Tatooine and gone whip the Emperor before
A
New Hope if someone had just
always
told him he was a Jedi.
Star Wars analogies with this guy.
It's not always. Sometimes it's Batman. you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes right. You got to have the hero's journey, and I'll let Vanessa have that. Or maybe it's the demon's journey.
Right. You'll and allow it as well.
The idea of her becoming the big bad is kind of interesting as well.
Right.
I mean, I don't think they'll do that. I don't think like, they would do that because
maybe
that's...
Maybe God has abandoned her.
That's a very hard way to tell a story for an entire season.
Take over hell and earth. You heard it here first. Aaron says tell a story.
No. It's a tough road to hoe, but it seems interesting. It's an interesting concept.
Finally, Rennie says, the only thing I don't quite understand is how Dr. Acula works exactly. Lucifer is a spirit being that can possess your soul. I get that. But if Dracula is a flesh being, how does he change his appearance and how did he get into the room? In the book, he can turn into animals and mist, but never into other people, or he can age or de-age at will. The way I understand it is Lucifer possessed the actual orderly, and Dracula shape-shifted into a man that looked just like the orderly. Or was Dracula a sort of projection? Can he make himself look like anyone?
Well, we've seen in the past where, you know, when we actually see an external universe view, Vanessa's alone in these rooms. So I think this is all... I don't think the devil... Any fragment of the devil actually possesses these people. I think this is happening in a different compartment in her brain or a different temporal plane.
Right.
So that's how I kind of explain it. And also that, you know, Dracula always canonically has telepathy.
Right.
So he can just be like, mind if I cut in while your mind fucking...
See me now.
Yeah. So like, I guess it doesn't bother me because I don't think there's actually a physical possession because, you know, the orderly saying he literally is in the middle of his sentence for the entire 10-minute scene. And then they come back and he's finishing his sentence. So, like, I don't think he was actually possessed or any of that shit happened. I think this was all happening inside her head.
Right. I agree. That's all the feedback we have for this episode.
Yep. Once again, if you want to send us more, pennyearful@baldmove.com or on our forums, the forums.baldmove.com. And also, haven't asked this for a while, but if you could help us grow this show, that would be pretty swell.
How do they do that?
You can give us a rate and review us on iTunes if you like what you hear. You can share on social media sites if you have friends that are into Penny Dreadful and they like to talk about it. You can, you know the type. You got friends you're trying to bug them to watch Penny Dreadful and you finally got them in. Now you just, it's time to bug them to listen to the podcast. Send them to baldmove.com. It's really easy to retweet and like stuff and share stuff on social media, or if, you know, people are discussing it in other forums and places on the internet, you can mention, if you like the show and you think we're worth it. But
I got my soul sister listening. Who's your friend you brought?
I can't even get my co-host. he's a most implacable foe.
All right.
You expect
these people to do that.
I'm going to make it a point to grab someone and say, have you heard of Penny Dreadful? You should listen to this podcast. But yeah,
just
stick
a tube down these people's ears and force our podcast into it.
Yep, pour that boiling broth right into their lungs. And if they're not gurgling, you're not doing it right. So, but no, we'd appreciate it because this is a great show and needs more exposure and more people talking about it. So, if you can find it in your heart to help support us that way, that would be great.
Make like Ava Green, disrobe and expose us.
Disrobe us and expose us. Wipe your makeup all over us, and also
and
brush
wipe
our
it
hair
off later.
My hair could use a good brushing.
Yeah, it could.
All right, that's it for the week. I can't wait to see what happens. Like, this is like Sunday nights are so fucking awesome now because you got Game of Thrones and Penny Dreadful.
Penny Dreadful.
Penny, almost said Penny Arcade. It's a whole different thing. dueling it out to see. And they're both been really, really pitching fastballs.
Uh-huh.
So, it's another embarrassment of riches we got. All right, that's it. We will see you next week for the next podcast. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Bye.